Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with Niaz Berhan, a Kurdish student author from our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, and his amazing Freedom Writer teacher, Michael Wegman, who hails from Germany. We discuss Niaz's harrowing journey as a Kurdish refugee and how the power of education has helped him to heal, find his voice, and build a new life in Europe. His story is both heartbreaking and heroic, and I hope it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. When the Freedom Writers and I started to gather stories for Dear Freedom Writer, we knew how important it was to hear from students from all walks of life. We wanted to create a book that would not only educate and enlighten readers, but would also provide hope and inspiration during these difficult times. So when we were introduced to Niaz, a Kurdish student seeking asylum in Germany, we knew that his story would make a powerful and important contribution to our new book. Until he was 8 years old, Niaz grew up in the region his people culturally call Kurdistan, but was referred to politically as Northern Iraq. Niaz remembers his childhood fondly, surrounded by his loving family, playing games with his cousins, and spending weekends at his grandparents' house. But when ISIS invaded, Niaz's idyllic childhood was turned upside down. ISIS brought with him dehumanizing violence and terror, which forced Niaz's family to make a difficult decision: stay and risk being killed, or flee their home and become refugees. They bravely chose the latter and embarked on a treacherous trek to Turkey, Hungary, and finally on to Germany in the hopes of finding safety. The journey was full of unimaginable hardships, but Niaz's family persevered. Eventually, they made it to Germany, where they were welcomed with open arms. Initially, Niaz and his family struggled to assimilate and rebuild their lives. Niaz didn't speak German and rarely attended school, but with the help of his dedicated Freedom Writer teacher, Michael Wegman, Niaz slowly began to embrace education and find his voice. Now, Niaz is a published author and has a bright future ahead of him. To honor Niaz's journey, we wanted to share a reading of his Dear Freedom Writer story, My Flag Has No Country, by a fellow freedom writer, Yaman Ahmed, who is from Akko, Israel, one of the oldest Muslim settlements in the world. Yaman has graciously offered to read Niaz's story for us today.
Hello, my name is Yaman. I'm a freedom writer in the book Dear Freedom Writer. And today we're going to be reading Letter 20, Immigrate, My Flag Has No Country. Dear Freedom Writer, I'm from Kurdistan in northern Iraq. I lived there until I was about 8 years old. I now live in Germany as a refugee. In Iraq, I had a wonderful childhood. My entire family lived there, so I was never lonely and always surrounded by them. Every weekend, my family would get together at my grandfather's house. It was huge. My cousins and I had all the rooms we needed to play hide-and-seek, soccer, and other Kurdish games, while our parents sat in the house talking and drinking tea. I remember feeling safe and loved. We would come in after long days of playing and pass out, exhausted. I remember sometimes having silly nightmares and waking up terrified, only to have my grandparents comfort me back to sleep. This was my life, week after week, year after year. But then ISIS came. When ISIS first arrived, we would hear the quiet pops, rattles, and bangs of gunfire and bombs far off in the distance, knowing all too well that these sounds could come from battles with the Kurdish Peshmerga, or something far more sinister. In a conflict, usually the fighting exists between uniformed fighters on either side. ISIS did things differently. They were massacring everyone, men, women, even children, and the elderly. Uniforms didn't matter. Civilian homes were being bombed and destroyed as if they were military outposts. Hundreds of thousands of Kurdish innocents were murdered when ISIS came through their town. We knew that if they got close, we too would have to leave or suffer the same fate. My family and I held out hope that the Peshmerga fighters would repel the ISIS invasion. But before we knew it, they were right in front of our city. The shooting and the explosions sounded much closer now. I remember it feeling oddly normal for me. The Kurdish refugees pouring through our city, fleeing the violence, knowing we too would have to flee if ISIS got any closer. Waking up every day wondering if I would survive. It was simply luck that my family and I survived. Our neighbors weren't so lucky. The day we left Kurdistan, my family was startled by a deafening blast and the sensation of the earth rumbling beneath our feet. When my father went outside to investigate what had happened, he saw our neighbor's house reduced to rubble. He was horrified to see dead people lying everywhere in pools of their own blood. He came back into the house and said we had to leave now. So we drove to Erbil to cross the border into neighboring Turkey. Erbil was filled with refugees, all of them exhausted, my family included. We sold our car and began our long walk across the border. Crossing the border into Turkey, my family knew there was no turning back. There wouldn't be any more weekends at my grandparents'. We were now in another country that wasn't known for being friendly to Kurdish refugees. We knew we couldn't stay in Turkey. So with the help of smugglers, we attempted to make our way to Europe, where we heard they were much more accepting of my people. After my father paid the smugglers, I remember a white man who spoke English gruffly taking our passports so that we couldn't flee. Then stuffing my family with 35 other refugees into a little truck. We drove in complete darkness, smashed together, no food, no water for about 3 days. It was nothing but horrible. People were crying. I had to shush them because we needed to be completely quiet, as someone may hear us at the border checkpoints. Along the way, when anyone had to use the bathroom, they would have to do it into some bag that could be sealed off, that sniffing dogs couldn't smell our excrement. The little sleep I got on that trip was interrupted by nightmares. The nightmares made me miss my grandparents and the comfort and safety I felt in their home, which didn't exist in the back of this dark, quiet, and packed truck. After 3 unending days, the doors opened to a strange place and unfamiliar shouting voices. There were uniformed men pulling us out of the truck. It didn't feel safe, and we didn't feel wanted. I remember a kind-looking man trying to offer us water as we marched toward being processed. I didn't understand why no one was taking it. I was so thirsty, but my family told me not to accept the water. We didn't know what was in it. We finally arrived at what looked like a prison. The next 35 hours we spent gathering our information, dividing the men and women into separate blocks. In their custody, we weren't given any food or water. We had to wait for everyone to finish being processed before we would be released, and then finally look for something to eat in a place we didn't know, with a language we didn't recognize. After being released, we discovered we were in Hungary, another place that was extremely unaccepting of refugees. Then we saw a familiar-looking English-speaking white man next to a familiar-looking little truck. Our hearts sank as we were forced back into it. He brought us to a house where we were told we could stay for a week with our entire family in a very small room. We were cramped, scared, and confused, but we finally got something to drink and eat. The week passed, and we were all piled into another truck with a lot of people. And again, for 3 days, without eating, drinking, or seeing daylight, we traveled to a place we didn't know. We were discovered in Dusseldorf, Germany. I was told later that when the German authorities found us, they thought I had died. Apparently, I was so malnourished that my body shut down. I was hardly breathing, unconscious, and my eyes wouldn't open. The German people immediately took me and nursed me back to health. I awoke to another strange world, unfamiliar voices and languages I didn't recognize, but this time I was encouraged to drink and eat what they gave me. The English-speaking white man, his terrible truck, our passports, and all of our money were gone. My family poured the last of everything we had into getting out of Kurdistan. We had nothing, but we had help. Germany assisted my family's asylum application filing, then sent us to Vorda, a small town. It wasn't my grandparents' home, but it wasn't a cramped little truck. I felt a bit of that same safety and comfort that their home, now so far away, once brought. My family and I struggled to assimilate. That first year, I didn't go to school very often. I had problems learning the language and suffered from debilitating nightmares. Every time I'd see a truck like the one we were smuggled in, I would run and hide from it, afraid that I'd see that man again. But the German people sent me to therapy, and I responded well to it. I learned how to speak the German language in my free time at a specialty school. I started doing much better in my school, and my grades improved immensely. Now, I live and go to school in another small town called Wesel. Even though I feel safe and the nightmares aren't so bad, sometimes I get terrifying flashbacks about fleeing the home I loved in Kurdistan. I don't think I'll ever leave Germany. I consider it my second home. Still, I can't help but think about my people and people like me. So, Freedom Writer, do you think there will ever be a country again for Kurds? One where we're not hunted? Will we ever again have Kurdistan full, safe, feeling places? Like my grandparents' home? Sincerely, my flag has no country.
I'm so grateful that Yaman, Niaz, and Michael, whom we affectionately call Mick, took the time to speak with us. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Niaz Burhan and his teacher and translator, Mick Wegman. Mick, I was wondering if the first question you could ask Niaz is a little bit about his life in Kurdistan before coming to Germany.
In Iraq, war ich vor nach Deutschland kam, ne?
Yeah. He said it were the best times of his life, and he thinks he will never have this time again. And what's interesting is that he said we had no cell phones. This was because they were together with their family and never had negative thoughts. They just were happy and played together and made the best of the day every day. When he thinks back about it, he says, I will never have such a great time again.
When the war started in his community, was he aware that his village and his family home would be attacked? As a child, was he kind of aware of the war, or was it all very sudden?
Der kam ganz, ganz plötzlich. Wir hatten nie was davon gehabt.
They knew that there is war in their country, but it was far away. We never thought that the war will come to us. So when it came closer, it was, I won't say surprise, but he never mentioned that there will be in a war. He never thought that it will happen, that the war will come to their village.
When his family decided that they wanted to leave, did they have a plan of where they wanted to go? And did they have a plan of who would actually leave?
Yeah, the first goal was safetyness. So everyone, they knew who flee from the war beyond the border, and that was the goal. So they just wanted to be safe. And during the way, they thought, when we want to be safe, we have to go to Europe. They never said, we want to go to Germany or to France or somewhere. It was Europe was the goal, because they knew that Europe is safe.
In Kurdistan, what language did he primarily speak with his family and with his friends?
Kurdish. But he said that Kurdish is not Kurdish, because we have a lot of people, students in school from Turkey, and there were also Kurdish students, but it was difficult for them to speak Kurdish, because they had 7 complete different dialects, so Kurdish is really not the same as Kurdish.
For people that don't know the historical context, both the Iraqis and ISIS wanted to attack the Kurdish. Is that correct?
Yes. No.
When he was born in 2004, Saddam Hussein was the president of Iraq, and there were huge problems with the Kurdish. And there was this few years until the ISIS came, where they could live in peace. But when the ISIS came, it was much heavier, it was much more difficult for them.
The Kurdistan people, are they practicing Muslims?
Also, wir sind sehr gläubig.
So the most Kurdish people are Muslims. But there were also Christians and Yazidis, which is something between Muslims and Christians. And in his village, they were all Muslims. And one day they visited his aunt in another village, and there he came the first time in contact with Christians. He never knew that another religion exists.
I think a lot of Muslims in that region consider themselves either Shi'i or Sunni. Would he be considered a Shi'i or a Sunni?
Nee, also
when people ask, he says, I'm Muslim. He never says, I'm explicitly Sunni, but there are Sunnis.
With everything that is happening in the Ukraine, and also with the protest in Iran, has Niaz been particularly interested in these other regions that are also having problems right now?
Yeah,
of course, Ukraine Krieg, it's a big thing in German media, so we hear about it every day, so you don't have the chance to not hear it. And in Iran, he comes from the border directly, so it was Iraq, Iran, very close to each other, so they have good contact, and he said that his brother is married with an Iran girl, and yeah, he says it's just sad what they are doing. So if they want to wear a hijab, they have to do it, the women have to do it if they wanted to, but it's wrong to say you have to wear it. So his parents say that to his sister, so she's 16 now, and they say if you want to wear it, you can do it, but if you don't want to wear it, it's okay. So this is what he thinks it's the right way.
What was so beautiful about the story that he shared and then wrote in Dear Freedom Writer was the actual journey of leaving Kurdistan and finally coming to your community in Germany. So can you tell us a little bit about the journey that he wrote about and the journey he experienced?
He really now knows what fear is. This is feeling which is very strong, and what he experienced is total fear. But also he knows that he's very strong, because his journey was so hard and so tough. because this marching or because this going by feet and the things they had to do, and he's stronger definitely, and thinks that it was the right way. It was tough and hard, but I don't know if I would have stayed in Iraq, perhaps I'm dead now. So the journey was tough and hard, but he survived it, and after that he can say it was the right choice, because he doesn't know if he would be alive if he stayed in Iraq.
Mick, what I loved about what he wrote was the transportation element. His family giving all of their money to a stranger to put them in a van. Can you give us some of the details about the leap of faith that they took, giving their money to somebody to try to transport them into Europe, and how that was such a difficult journey?
What his mother told him a few weeks ago, and he doesn't know that it was like that, that his father was very sick and he got operated immediately when they arrived in Germany. And since then he got 11 operations, and now he's better, but was Nias didn't he forgot it. It was not in his brain. So this was one reason why his father always fell down in the transporter, because he was very sick. Yeah, that was the reason that they said we have to give this man all our money, because we have to come to Europe very fast, because his father's. And he said we had just a chance to trust him. And Nia said we didn't know if he will take our money and shoot us, or what he will do. So we didn't trust him, but we had to trust him to leave this place. And so this was the decisions. Maybe we come to Europe, or maybe he will shoot us. So then it's like that, because it was clear that they couldn't stay, and then money wasn't important. It was just important to find a way to get out of that.
Mick, being a European, some countries are more open to immigrants and refugees and asylum seekers, and some countries are not. And I understand the first country he went to was Hungary, and Nias was not embraced in Hungary. So can you talk a little bit about what it was like when the family first arrived in Hungary?
Hungary was the most horrible thing most horrible country where they arrived. And in Turkey, it was okay. Yeah, but the problem was when the doors opened, the police came immediately. And he says, I don't know why the police comes and puts us to jail. We didn't know it before, and we didn't know that we were in Europe first, because they thought Europe is a safe continent, and they didn't mention that in Europe is a country where they act like that. They were treated like animals in the prison, and that when his brother lied on the ground and was almost dead, they asked the policeman, give us something to drink or something to eat, because he seems to die. And the policeman said, yeah, you don't get anything. So this is, so he will never go back to Hungary or put a foot in this country.
For the journey from Hungary to Germany, what was that journey like?
Yeah, they always were told that Europe is like paradise and everything is good. And now from the journey from Hungary to Germany, yeah, they were in a dark transporter, and he said it was like hell on earth. And if he thinks back, and if he knew before they had to flee that this journey was so tough and so hard, he said he wouldn't do it. And his parents also said that they will never do that again. If he knew it before, he would like to stay in Iraq and try his best, because it was so horrible. We are very different in Germany. I think the most Germans, or the most of us, know how hard it is for refugees, and we want to help them. And for example, in our school, we knew there would be some refugees from Ukraine, and we immediately started to put some things together for the students, to that they have something to write, and a bag and something like that. And we immediately had a big or a lot of things that these refugees can go to school. This is what we did immediately. But especially 2015, where Angela Merkel opened the border. That was the birth of this racist Germans, I would say. So we are struggling with that till today. So we have a lot of people, or some people, who said we don't want refugees, and I think it's about 10% of Germany, but for me it's 10% too much. But the discussion is also in media. So we have this party, the AfD, and they exist because of Angela Merkel's decision to open the border, and they try to get a lot of hate and all this stuff to the Germans, and this is what we are struggling at the moment. You can't discuss with discuss with them, but there are a lot of people who share their thinking.
And do you find that your particular community is, as you said, an oasis for refugees?
Our community is, that's definitely. They get help immediately, and I never heard of someone who is against refugees. So I think Wesel is a safe place for refugees, and they are definitely welcome.
How many different communities have come to your city that are refugees? I know you said the Kurdish and the Ukrainians, but I know that it's a melting pot. So what are some of the different communities that have been seeking refuge in your community?
I have in my class, or had in my class, a girl from Saudi Arabia, and we have kids from Eritrea, and I think from almost all over the world where refugees come from. So, this is a thing that often teachers talk about. I have, 50% of people with migration backward. And they really know who is not a, biological German, because at the moment we have a lot of Turkeys who are in third generation in Germany. And for me, that is really not important. I don't know how much percent in my class are have a migration backward. But for me, that's a Freedom Writer thing. For me, I have the students, I have Nias, I have Jivan, I have Zaha, and these are just names, and these are persons, and with their individuality. And I don't care if Nias is a Kurdish from Iraq, and this is not important for me.
Can you ask Nias about how he was embraced in Germany? Did he feel that this is his new home, and has it become easier over time?
It was a complete different world, because where he comes from, it was a poor village. His family never lived in poverty, but it's a complete different world between Germany and Iraq. So even if we have streets, that was something new for him, or to go out with new clothes. It was something he never knew before. And his mother said that Iraq is their, we call it father country. We have father country and mother country, and Germany is his mother country. So this is a nice picture, I think. And he said it was difficult at the beginning, because he had to assimilate to our culture. So he has to combine his two cultures, because he know that he can't do things here that he had done in Iraq. For him, it's in Iraq he grew up and was just a child and lived with his feelings, and in Germany he grew up with his head. Here he gets a self-thinking person, and this is for him the difference. So it's he feels safe in both countries.
Does he feel that he was welcomed, or did he ever face discrimination?
Everyone who comes from another country will hear some kind of discrimination, and it's in Germany this is the same as in other countries. But for him, this feeling is greater that the German helped him and his families.
Do you think it was easier for Ukrainians to migrate to Germany or any other country in Europe than people from Turkey or Kurdistan or Iraq?
I think that's right, because Ukraine is a European land, and it was a shock for all of us that they were attacked, and know from some people who are reservists in the military that they live in fear now because they are afraid that Russia will attack Germany too, and that they have to go to war, and so I think that feeling is bigger to help the Ukrainians, and so they can feel safe. And yeah, everything that Zelensky does is very impressive, because he gives you really the feeling that that they are attacked, and the Russians attack the children of the Ukrainians and the women and everyone, and they don't have war against special cities. It's just against the Ukrainian community, and so I think it's for the German, a lot of them are more helpful. For example, the grandmother of my woman, so it's also my grandmother, she said that she can really feel with the Ukraine refugees, because she was a child in 1940, and she also had to be a refugee, so she had to leave her home. And she said, I really feel with the Ukraine refugees, but she also says that, for example, the Turkeys are bad and... that they take our jobs and so on. So that is a good example for what people in Germany feel like. So I think it's very tough for people like Nias and like other Turkey, because of this, of their, how they look like. But that's I think a point, definitely.
Mick, was your grandma a refugee because her city was destroyed, or did she come?
Yeah, Weser was destroyed and was bombed, and so her parents sent her to, I don't know, to Bayern, I think, to South Germany.
As a German living close to Ukraine, are you personally nervous that this will not end in Ukraine?
At the beginning, I was afraid. I thought it will work like in the Krim, that Putin will march in and the other countries say, oh, don't do that, and that's everything. But it's very impressive how the Ukrainians react, and how the reaction of the EU and also from the USA was. So I saw some interviews with Russians who are not okay with Putin. And they said that Putin was really, really surprised that the Europeans immediately... He never thought that will happen so fast, and that hurts him a lot, and that the Ukraine will be so strong. So at the moment, for me, it's clear that it's just a matter of time. On the one hand, someone kills Putin, so they can go out of this war, the Russians. Or on the other hand, perhaps really he uses his atomic arsenal. I don't know, but for me personally, it's far away. And when I hear Nias, who says it's far away at the beginning, and then you get surprised, yeah, I don't know. I think I never thought about it deeply. For me, it's really far away at the moment.
Mick, what is it like to have such a beautifully diverse classroom? I think your students remind me of room 203, different languages and races, and it just is so beautiful. So I think you see the beauty, don't you?
Yes, of course. For me, I'm very interested in how they live and Yeah, I visited Nias at home because I had to do all this things for the book. And this family is so nice, and this is another culture, and I really love it because so they're very polite, and it's complete different from what the Germans are. We are also polite, but it's more like come in, and we cooked something for you, and you get some tea, and it's completely a different culture, and I love it. And but it's also, you have to know how these kids are, because especially the Turkey kids, they are very impulsive. So they get loud very fast and scream and are very active, and but they are not bad. So it's just their culture, and it's like the Spanish. They are speaking very quickly, and everyone knows it, and that's okay. But no one accepts that Turkish are very impulsive and very, they always think they are aggressive, but that's not the thing. It's just another kind of being, and that is what they are. And you have to know that so that you can work with it. A lot of colleagues of mine say they are aggressive, and I say no, they are not aggressive, they are impulsive, and they are very loud, I know, but this is they don't hate you or something like that. It's just you have to know that.
Has Nias been able to get asylum status or refugees? Like, what is his current status in Germany?
Yeah, they both of the parents are working, and they are waiting for the German passports, so that's everything. But because of the war in Ukraine, they don't know how long they have to wait. But actually, everything is ready.
Is the family able to travel without German passports?
Yeah, they can travel, but they need a visa. Yeah, he's able to travel all over the world, except of Iraq. So that's German rule that you can't go to the country where you come from when you are a refugee, because that doesn't make sense. But when they have the German passports, they can travel everywhere they want.
Mick, can you ask him what he misses about home? What are the things that are not in Germany that he just misses as part of his life?
Okay, yeah, what he misses is his family and his childhood. So he said, I would give everything to be a child again and live in Iraq.
And what would he want the world to know about the Kurdish people?
In his opinion, there exist two kind of people, and the one who have problems with Kurdish people and the one who don't have problems with them. And he doesn't understand it, because I said I'm just a normal guy, I'm just a normal human being, and it doesn't matter where I come from and what my religion is or something like that. And he said, I wish everyone the double of that what he wishes me. So if someone wishes me all the bad, I wishes him in the double, and the other way too. If someone loves me and likes me, I like him the double of it.
And as an author, how does he feel about his story being published for the world to read?
Very proud of what he did, and he loves it, because he says, I had the opinion, the opportunity to show the world, and especially in countries where they don't, for example, Australia, where they don't know how we live and what my journey is about, that they have the opportunity to read it and to know what happens in the world. And this is what he's very proud of. And I hope that he can show the world how the Kurdish people or the Iraq people are in reality, and not of what they might heard.
Does his journey make him more sympathetic for other refugees from other places?
For him, it's clear now is that he has to help everyone who needs help. Yeah, and he really tries to give it to everyone. And he said that he met a Ukraine kid and the city, and yeah, they looked at each other, and the kid showed or tried to say something and put his cell phone out, and yeah, and he has took him with him, and they went something to eat, so just to be together, and they change the numbers, and yeah, for him it's clear that he has to help everyone who needs help, and especially for refugees, he has his sympathies, you call it like that.
With the woman who was killed in Iran was also Kurdish. She was Kurdish Iranian. And if he has a soft spot for her struggle now that she's passed and that people are protesting in Iran.
Yeah, hurt him a little bit more because she was Kurdish. But afterwards he said, yeah, but it's not about the nationality. It's about the human beings, and it doesn't matter where she comes from. And it's just because the people in Iran are sick in their head, and this is what makes him sad. And he realizes that she's a Kurdish woman, but it's not for him. Yeah, so he realized it perhaps a little bit more, but for him it's not really the most important thing. It's about the human beings, and this what happened to her shouldn't happen to any woman on the world.
I have a final question for both you and for Niaz. And I want to know what Niaz's advice would be for countries who need to accept refugees. What he went through in Hungary was horrific. So clearly he doesn't want the hostility, but what would Niaz want to advise other countries and other communities who open up their borders and open up their hearts?
It's not about the nationality, and it should never be about the nationality. It should be about the human beings. And so he said, be polite to other people, no matter where they're from, and then the world would be great, and let them work, because people want to work, and so every country gives the refugees a place to live, and the refugees can work, so good for both sides.
Mick, what would your advice be to educators who are in classrooms around the globe, who have the seats change with different faces and colors and races and creeds? What would your advice be for those teachers to accept immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers?
That's very easy. Just talk to them, talk with them. Not just be a teacher and do your stuff, what you have to do. So this is what I'm doing with every kid in my class. I just talk to them and try to learn from them, because they have a story, and they, yeah, often, especially to kids who have a bad behavior, talk to them and ask what's going wrong, and you will get an answer, and it will make you clear that this kid is not bad, because there happened something in his life, and it's so very important to know about that. So you can't work with a kid when you don't know it. So this is what I learned when I started to be a freedom water teacher.
I'm so grateful to Niaz, Mick, and Yaman for sharing Niaz's powerful story with us. Niaz's journey is the reminder of the strength and resilience of the human spirit. My dear listeners, may we learn to see the humanity in all people, regardless of their race, religion, or region. May we strive to build welcoming communities that embrace our differences. And in honor of our guest, Niaz Burhan, may we remember that no matter how dark and difficult the journey, there is always hope and healing. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for being part of our Freedom Writer family. If you'd like to read Niaz's letter, My Flag Has No Country, or learn more about our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, Stories of Hardship and Hope from the Next Generation, please go to the episode description in your podcast app and click on the links in our show notes. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.